Thank you. Good afternoon. I've just had an excellent series of meetings with Chancellor Merkel and with Ministers Steinmeier and von der Leyen. I thanked each of them for their personal commitment to our alliance. We discussed the wide range of security challenges we face and our plans for the NATO summit in September. Our summit takes place at a critical time. For 65 years, the NATO alliance has helped bring peace and prosperity to the free countries of Europe. Today, more than at any time since the end of the Cold War, that is being put to the test. From Eastern Europe to North Africa and the Middle East. So we must remain ready to keep our nations safe, to respond to any threat, to reinforce our network of partners around the world, to help keep the world stable and secure, and all allies must take their share of responsibility in keeping our transatlantic alliance strong. I thank Germany for your leading role in Afghanistan. Your troops have done a remarkable job in the north of the country, as I saw for myself when I visited Mazar-i-Sharif. Across the country, security has created the conditions for a better Afghanistan and given the Afghan people the opportunity to develop their country and to decide their own future. At the end of the year, we will end our combat mission and turn a new page in Afghanistan. Germany has again taken a leading role in offering to be framework nation in the new non-combat mission we are planning after 2014. Taking the lead in training, advising, and assisting Afghan forces, building on the many gains we have made. Germany also plays a key role in keeping our collective defense strong, both to our south with a Patriot battery in Turkey and to the east in the Baltic region. In Szczecin, in Poland, Germany is working closely with Poland and Denmark to enhance the readiness of NATO's multinational corps headquarters. Contributing additional troops and turning it into readiness headquarters, high readiness headquarters. This is a significant contribution to the strengthening of our collective defense. Germany's commitment to international peace and security is clear, and this level of commitment is particularly important now. With her actions in Ukraine, Russia has violated international law and torn up the rule book that has served Europe so well since the end of the Cold War. Such behavior cannot be allowed to return to Europe. No one wants to turn away from our cooperation with Russia, but no one can ignore that Russia has violated the very principles upon which our NATO-Russia cooperation is built and to which Russia herself was committed. Germany has played a crucial role in the international response to Russia's actions. When Europe and the world needed you, you were there. It is vital for Europe and the world that Germany remains strong to provide not only political and economic pressure, but military presence as well, so that no country can be in any doubt if the rules are broken, if our freedom, our people and our borders are threatened, we will respond. Of course, Germany's defense priorities are for Germany to decide. But I would urge you, as I urge every ally, to give increased priority to your defense. As European economies recover from the economic crisis, so too should our investment in defense. Today, our world is more dangerous and more unstable than at any time since the end of the Cold War. By facing up to this reality, by investing in our own defense, and by standing together as one through the NATO alliance, we will ensure our peace and security for another 65 years and beyond. And with that, I'm ready to take your questions.
Thank you very much. Wir kommen zu Fragen. Die erste Frage hat Herr Wiegold.
Secretary General, I'll do it in English, so no translation needed. You've mentioned your thanks to Germany for its commitment in NATO. You have mentioned that you have been urging Germany to give priority to defense. Did you talk specifically about the 2% threshold, 2% of GDP, which Germany falls below for quite some time? Has this come up in your talk with the Chancellor or with the ministers?
Yes, indeed. I have raised this issue because we will address it at the summit in Wales. No decisions have been made yet, but I have argued that the illegal Russian military actions in Ukraine are a wake-up call, a reminder that we cannot take our security in Europe for granted. Obviously, after the end of the Cold War and 20 or 25 years of reduced tensions in Europe, it's no wonder and no surprise that defense budgets have been declining. But we are now in a dramatically changed security situation in Europe. And let me remind you that during the recent 5 years, Russia has increased its defense investment by 50%, while NATO, in the same period of time, has decreased its defense spending by 20% in average. Some NATO allies have even decreased more, by up to 40% decrease in defense spending. This is not sustainable. So that's why we will have to address this issue at the summit, and I hope we can agree on a common commitment to gradually increased defense investments.
Die nächste Frage, Herr Kollege.
About investments into German defense. You've probably noticed the German debate on armed drones. What is your view? What is your expectation towards that? To the question if and when German forces should deploy or should not deploy armed drones.
First of all, I would like to stress that decisions on acquisition of military capabilities are national decisions. So it's not for NATO to decide whether Germany or any other ally could or should acquire drones. Having said that, within NATO, we have identified drones as one of the capabilities we need to invest in. So drones constitute a shortfall. And we encourage investments in that capability because drones can contribute to saving lives. They can protect deployed troops And we have seen in NATO operations that the use of drones can also save civilian lives through an improved surveillance, reconnaissance, so that our commanders in the field get a better picture of what is actually going on the ground. So this is why we have identified drones as one of the critical shortfalls and encourage allies to invest in that capability.
Die nächste Frage, Herr Kollege.
Rob Silverberg for the Dutch newspaper Telegraph. Mr. Secretary General, I have two questions. First, the Netherlands, for example, are on the level of about 1% of the GDP for the defense budget. What do you say about that? Because it's not enough concerning your policy, is the first question. The second question is about the Patriots in Turkey. The chemical weapons, they should have moved from Syria right now. So should also the Patriot missiles and the soldiers, should they now retreat from Turkey because there's no reason to stay there?
First, on the latter, let me stress that the deployment of Patriots is not solely connected to the existence of chemical weapons in Syria. The deployment of Patriots aims at protecting the Turkish population and the Turkish society against any potential missile attack from Syria. So it can be separated from the issue of chemical weapons. It's a protection against any kind of missile attacks, irrespective of the existence or non-existence of chemical weapons. On defense spending, my appeal is an appeal to all NATO countries to gradually increase defense spending. So that, of course, also includes the Netherlands, just to make sure that there's no misunderstanding. Let me add that as a former Prime Minister of Denmark, I know very well that this is a challenging task because many nations are struggling with their public finances to cut deficits, stop indebtedness. And that's also important because the higher the debt, the more fragile the society. So there is, of course, also a security aspect related to the economy. In other words, sound fiscal policies are also sound security policies. But having said that, it is not sustainable that we are cutting deeply while Russia and other nations are increasing their defense budgets. Let me add to this that we have identified a number of shortfalls, areas where we need more investments, like drones, as I mentioned, like air-to-air refueling, which was also mentioned by the European Council when it met in December. So we have identified a number of areas where we need more investment. And finally, this is also a question about solidarity within our alliance. It's a fact that one ally, the United States, represents more than two-thirds of the overall defense expenditure within our alliance. And in some areas, we rely 100% of capabilities provided by the United States. And while, of course, it's part of being an alliance that we help each other, I can tell you that whenever I meet American politicians on the Hill in Washington, they ask questions, why is it that the American taxpayers should continue to pay the bulk of the common bill for our common security? Couldn't the Europeans pay a bit more? And I'm concerned that if we, the Europeans, are not willing to invest sufficiently in our defense, then there is a clear risk that American politicians would conclude that they should pay more attention to other parts of the world. So I see this also as a part of solidarity within our alliance, and this is why I appeal to not only the Netherlands but all allies that we find ways and means to gradually increase our defence investment.
Die nächste Frage, Herr Kollege.
Valasopoulos from the Greek TV mega channel. You speak about investing in defence, and at the same time in Greece we are coming out in a very serious finance crisis, and at the same time we are in a very sensitive region, Southeast Europe, and the only defence problem has Greece, or the biggest, is Turkey, another member of NATO. How all this can go together? Finance crisis, investing in defence, and at the same time feeling insecure from another member of NATO.
Let me start with the latter. Actually, I think not least thanks to the membership of NATO, both Turkey and Greece have managed to settle disputes in a peaceful manner during decades now, which I think is the good news and a testament to the strength of being a collective military alliance. Next, actually Greece is among the few allies that fulfill the 2% benchmark when it comes to defence expenditure. And finally, I do know, as I mentioned, that for many countries it is hard to see how they can increase defence spending while they are still struggling with their economies. I mean, austerity measures come at a cost, and that's why I also meet the argument that we have to take into account the different economic conditions in different countries. I think that would be possible to do that. But overall, we need a common commitment to increase defence investments as the economies recover.
Die nächste Frage, Herr Kollege.
My name is Wojciech Szymański from the Polish Radio. You have mentioned this multinational corps that is in Poland, in Szczecin, based, granted by Denmark, Germany and Poland. Do you know if there are any real plans to enhance this corps, if it should be bigger? What do NATO members think about it? Thank you.
Actually, defense ministers from the three countries announced recently that they are going to, so to speak, upgrade that headquarters and also improve its readiness. So that's an example of how we reinforce our collective defence, and I wouldn't exclude that the three countries will be joined by others. So I think we will see an upgrade of that headquarters, including making it more responsive, as we call it.
Die nächste Frage, Herr Jung.
Mr. Rasmussen, a few days back you said that Russia has infiltrated European green groups fighting fracking. What kind of evidence do you have for that claim?
Yeah, as a matter of principle, we never comment on intelligence information, but we have solid evidence that Russia is also active when it comes to infiltration of so-called non-governmental organizations. I do not suggest that's the case for all environmental organizations, of course not. I have also had an opportunity to discuss this with political leaders in allied nations who confirm this. So it's a fact. I've just stated a fact. I'm not engaging in an energy discussion because that's not for the NATO Secretary General to do that. But speaking about energy security in Europe, it is a fact that from a security point of view, it's a problem that European countries are so dependent on imported oil and gas from Russia. And then, of course, pretty easy to guess that the reason why Russia is financing groups that counter the development of alternative energy sources, the reason is that they want to keep it that way, that European countries are dependent on imported oil and gas from Russia. It's not complicated science.
But intelligence information is not a fact. If it's a fact, you need to give us evidence that it's that way.
Yeah, but as you know, usually it's very difficult to provide backgrounds when we gather intelligence, and that's why, as a matter of principle, we never comment on that. But what I have done is actually just to convey a message, which is a fact based on our intelligence, based on information I receive from political leaders in allied nations.
Herr Kollege.
Yeah, Fabrizio Ossino was Italian. I have two questions for you. You talk about peace and stability, but your last military act in Afghanistan and Iraq didn't had this effect till now. And another thing, and you didn't talk about UN, so the rule of the United Nations in these wars. I would like to know your point of view about the rule of the United Nations and the rule of the diplomacy in key peacing for the future. And another small question, what will happen in the future when even the other countries will be able to make and use drones? Did you picture so a photograph like when also the other country will have the ability to make drones and to use them? What will happen? What which will be the effect in the world? Which kind of peace we will have? Thank you.
First on Afghanistan and Iraq, on the latter, let me remind you that NATO as such was not engaged in the conflict in Iraq, but afterwards NATO deployed a training mission to Iraq to train and educate Iraqi security forces, but at a certain stage we had to leave because the Iraqis didn't prolong the necessary security agreements. Now, on Afghanistan, we are on track. We will complete our ISAF combat mission by the end of this year as planned. And I'm confident that the Afghan security forces will be able to take full responsibility for the security all over Afghanistan as planned. And while there are still challenges, of course there are challenges in Afghanistan, we have seen clear progress Afghanistan today is a much better society than Afghanistan 15 or 10 years ago, security-wise, while you have still attacks, the security situation is better, and as I said, we have built a strong Afghan security force that will take full responsibility for the security, and we will continue to train and assist after 2014. But also, if you have a look at the broader development of Afghanistan, it's a much better society. You see economic growth from a low starting point, yes, but you see economic growth, which is underpinned by better infrastructure. Tens of thousands of roads have been constructed. A huge majority of the population is covered by mobile phones. I mention it because that's vital for a modern economy. The educational system has improved. 8 million children go to school, out of which more than one third are girls. Previously, they couldn't get an education at all. The health system has improved. Life expectancy has risen, in particular for women. Child mortality has gone down. And you also see a very vibrant media environment in Afghanistan. So across the board, you see progress. I do not suggest that everything is perfect. Of course, there are still challenges. But it's a much better society than it was some years ago. Now, on the UN role, I see the United Nations as an indispensable international actor. And in fact, all current NATO operations are based on United Nations mandates. So we operate within a United Nations framework, and we have during recent years improved our cooperation with the United Nations. And actually, our Libya operation in 2011 was based on a United Nations mandate, actually a very historic Security Council resolution of responsibility to protect the civilian population in Libya. Finally, on drones, let me stress one very important aspect of this, because I have seen that in the debate, drones are mentioned as something very special. But from an international legal perspective, we don't see any difference between manned aircrafts and unmanned drones. When we elaborate rules of engagement, for us, it's the same, whether it's manned or unmanned.
Herr Rasmussen muss uns in 10 Minuten verlassen. Insofern müsste ich die Frageliste leider schließen. Die nächste Frage, Herr Zweigler, direkt dazu. Bitte.
Concerning Afghanistan, the actual situation. After 2014, a certain amount of troops should be stationed there. Condition is that the new president of Afghanistan should sign that agreement. Election right now is in a very, very, let's say, chaotic situation due to internal strife in Afghanistan. What happens if that agreement is not signed by whoever will be the follower of Karzai in the near future? The whole plan is then in limbo, in jeopardy.
The answer to that is very clear and very short. If there's no security agreement, there will be no training mission. It is as easy as that. It is a prerequisite for deploying a training mission that we have the necessary legal framework in place, and that is a bilateral security agreement between the US and Afghanistan and a NATO status of forces agreement. So if they are not signed in due time, we cannot deploy a training mission. But again, I do expect the legal framework to be signed so that we can deploy a training mission.
but this can be signed only by an elected president, and right that is the problem right now. It may be postponed for a long time.
We will see when the presidential electoral process will be completed. According to the latest information, it's still the intention to publish final results of the second presidential or the second round of presidential elections, to publish these results on the 22nd of July. If that's the case, there's still a fair chance that a new president will be inaugurated at the beginning of August. And both presidential candidates have pledged that they will sign the security agreements shortly after they take office. So in that case, the security agreements will be signed before the NATO summit and we can launch the training mission.
Herr Kollege, die nächste Frage.
Klaus Renne, Deutschlandfunk. As you know, the German parliament is putting often strict limits or caveats on any mission of Bundeswehr, wherever it may be. And I was wondering whether you think that this is working against effectiveness. Is this working in the future when countries are encouraged to pool and share, and in particular when our minister is now proposing that the German Bundestag will decide whether arms, whether drones will be armed in a faraway theater from a case-to-case decision?
Well, it's not a new phenomenon that certain contributions to NATO operations are based on certain caveats. In the past, we have dealt with that in a way that has allowed us to carry out our military tasks in an efficient manner. Also, in Afghanistan, I think it's. I mean, it is a prerequisite for deploying armed forces abroad that parliaments take decisions, that parliaments are in control, and of course they can set certain conditions. But having said that, you point to an important aspect of more and more multilateral cooperation. As you know, I have promoted the smart defense concept, which is about more multinational cooperation on developing military capabilities. And of course, it puts more emphasis on exactly this aspect, because when a nation decides to join such a multinational project, that specific nation must also accept that that specific capability can actually be deployed, can be used if necessary. If one of the participants in a multinational project can veto the use of such a multinational capability, then of course other participants in that collective project would start to doubt whether it's the right investment. If they invest in a certain capability, but others are able to block the use of it by using a veto, then that collective project is put into jeopardy. So you raise a very important issue that must be addressed if we are to move forward in using more and more collective solutions. And personally, I have no doubt that in the future, nations will need to help each other much more. We need more and more multilateral cooperation, because in the future, it will be increasingly difficult for individual nations to acquire the necessary and often very expensive military equipment on their own. So they will have to pool and share resources, joint efforts, and then they will also have to accept that those capabilities can actually be deployed and used.
Die letzte kurze Frage, Kollege.
Yeah. How serious do you take the threat by Russia that they will deploy SS-26 Iskander missiles in Kaliningrad close to the border with Poland? And did you already see signs that they have actually deployed them?
We are following developments closely. As I said, as a matter of principle, we never comment on intelligence information. But in a direct response to your answer, I would say, unfortunately, we have seen that declarations from the Russian side are not just words. We have seen recently that words have been followed by concrete action. So we take such declarations seriously.